On this edition of Jazz Profiles, a tribute to tenor saxophonist Stanley Turrentine. He passed away in the year 2000, just a few months after this show was produced.
One whoop out of his horn and you know who it is. He doesn't have to play a full bar. I can just hear a boom, and that's Stanley Turrentine. He's totally self-assured. He had and has a sound like nobody ever had before or since.
I think that Stanley personifies exactly what jazz is all about, because his playing is rooted in the blues. And you can hear it when he plays. Also, his sound is the true tenor sound to me.
Tenor saxophonist Stanley Turrentine is one of the most soulful and versatile musicians in jazz. And for much of his 50-year career, he's played music on his own terms, crossing musical boundaries, often in the face of criticism. Whether he's playing a tune that cries out for lost love or celebrates the joy of living, Stanley Turrentine's expressions are straight from the heart. I'm Nancy Wilson. On this edition of Jazz Profiles, a tribute to a giant of the tenor saxophone, Stanley Turrentine. If you see him in concert, you're likely to hear the blues, gospel, hard bop, a Latin beat, and rhythm and blues. He's an artist who doesn't limit himself to musical boundaries.
There are three things that I try to convey even in my music: sound, feeling, and emotion. You know, what I feel and what I hear, I try to play it to the best of my ability. It doesn't matter what category they put it in. I call it all music.
Record producer Creed Taylor worked with Stanley in the 1970s. He remembers a special quality that always comes through when Stanley performs.
Stanley, from the beginning up through this date, has always played with extraordinary honesty. He can't do it any other way. I don't think he would if he wanted to. He couldn't. People believe you when you're being yourself, and Stanley is himself, undeniably.
Well, Stanley is unique in that he is one of the younger breed of musicians. And I'm not talking about the 20, 30 years old now, but I'm talking about younger than me, that has found his own voice.
Bassist Ray Brown has known Stanley Turrentine for almost 60 years.
And that's something that takes a while to do in jazz, is to get your own voice so that it's recognizable.
There are a lot of great musicians, man, that, you know, play. But I think you play your experiences, too. You can't just play. I don't think that you can just play whatever you got out of a book. Most of the stuff I didn't get out of a book. I experienced what I did. I'm talking about life.
In 1996, Stanley performed at a tribute for Oscar Peterson at New York's Town Hall. It was the first time the two had worked together, and Oscar says the concert was unforgettable.
He's a great leader in that when he plays, he takes command of the rhythm section, I feel. It's hard today to find that kind of a player. There aren't too many past Stanley. He leads the rhythm section into the direction he wants to go. His playing is always full of surprises, and it's certainly all improvisational. It's an event when someone with that kind of robust sound and wonderful musical linear ideas comes along and plays with you.
The words full-bodied describe one aspect of the Turrentine sound, and Stanley's got the physical stature to match. At first glance, he may look more like a football lineman than a jazz legend. He stands over 6 feet tall, has a wide barrel chest and broad shoulders. Producer Creed Taylor remembers his first impression of Stanley Turrentine.
I thought I'd better really be very cool, because anybody who plays with such a gigantic, monstrous tone and shouts like that through the saxophone. Turned out that Stanley, with the saxophone, is a monster, but Stanley, the person, is a relatively quiet, philosophical person.
The Stanley Turrentine I know has his quiet moments, but there are many sides to this man. He has a nice, easygoing nature. He loves joking around with friends and family. On days off, he heads for the golf course, and he plays to win. In life and in his music, he is driven by a spirit of adventure. Musically, Stanley has always taken risks, but in recent years, some of his choices have been panned by critics. Rather than spend time recording popular contemporary songs, they say he ought to focus on mainstream jazz. Critic Don Heckman writes for the Los Angeles Times.
Stanley can do a huge number of different things. He's a marvelous ballad player. He's a rapid-fire technician. He can play very quickly. He can play bebop. He can play rhythm and blues. He can do pop-oriented kinds of things. And I think that each project needs to be evaluated on the basis of what he was trying to do with that particular project, if we're going to evaluate, as opposed to just simply sitting back and enjoying it.
Oh, I've got, a lot of flack recording. You said, I sold out and I went commercial. Quote, unquote, jazz purists say this is jazz. And, you can put 100 people up against the wall and ask them what jazz is, and you get 100 different opinions. You know, it's like Duke Ellington said, there's only two kinds of music, good or bad. And that also depends on who's listening to it.
Thank you.
The Gene Harris Trio, with special guest Stanley Turrentine, recorded live at the Blue Note in 1985. It's NPR's Jazz Profiles, with a tribute to Stanley Turrentine. I'm Nancy Wilson. Stanley Turrentine was born on April 5, 1934, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. The steel town was in the throes of the Great Depression, and people were poor. But they found solace and joy in blues and gospel music. Years earlier, thousands of African Americans had left rural communities in the South to settle there. And by the late 30s, Pittsburgh had become a mecca for black musicians, such as drummers Art Blakey and Kenny Clark, singer Billy Eckstine, and composer Billy Strayhorn. Stanley remembers hearing Amma Jamal practicing piano after school. Bassist Ray Brown delivered newspapers to the Turrentine home. And both of Stanley's parents were musicians.
My mother was a great piano player. She played stride piano, you know. I think I got that blues feeling by listening to my mother. She used to play some nice, nice stuff.
Stanley was playing piano by ear when he was just 7 years old. His mother inspired a love of the blues that has lasted a lifetime. His older brother was also an inspiration. Tommy Jr. played trumpet and went on to work with Count Basie and Dizzy Gillespie. And their saxophone-playing father nurtured Stanley's love for the instrument. Before Stanley was 10, Tommy Sr. started teaching him how to take command and how to develop his own sound.
What he did was make me play whole tones, stand me in a corner. It would be my lesson, one note, like from the bottom of my horn, from the B-flat to the high F. Would be just one note after I play the note. For a while, he said, "Did you hear it?" And I said, "Dad," I said, "I'm standing in the corner playing this one note. I can't help but hear it." But what he was trying to, you know, show me was like there's a lot of sounds you can get out of one note. It depends on how you attack it, the air you put into the horn, what vibrato you use, and also you're getting ear training, how to play that note in tune. I think the sound that I developed, which is mine, I think my father is responsible for that.
Stanley demonstrated these early lessons for Dr. Billy Taylor and his audience during a performance at the Kennedy Center.
When you hold a note, for most people, it's just you're just holding a note.
But right.
Could you show us, give us sort of an example of what you mean?
The only thing he was saying to me was, take this note and hold it as long as you possibly can.
Now, if you take that and apply it to something that you like to do, which is to play a ballad, would you kind of give us an idea of how that might work?
Stanley Turrentine with the Billy Taylor Trio, recorded in 1996 for NPR's Billy Taylor's Jazz at the Kennedy Center. In Pittsburgh, The Turrentines lived in a working-class neighborhood on La Place Street. Stanley still remembers being lulled to sleep every night by the sounds of the gospel choir that filled the Baptist church next door. On Sundays, after service, the Turrentines spent afternoons in the theater, where they heard Lester Young, Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie, and other greats.
At that time, they called it the ghetto. But that was some of the happiest times of my life, you know. You know, I'd walk about two blocks and there would be music, you know, some live music. It would be a quartet or a quintet or a trio or a piano player or whatever. There's always, there was a lot of music around, you know.
Bassist Ray Brown.
We had two musicians' unions. Well, all cities had two musicians' unions in those days. It was a black and a white one. And the black union had a little club up on the top floor, and they had jam sessions beginning at midnight until 6 in the morning. And all of the musicians from all of the theaters went over there and jammed. You couldn't find any better music. It's impossible. All the top musicians in the world were going by there every night.
As a young boy, Stanley would sneak into those jam sessions. On one occasion, he got a chance to sit in with a young Texas saxophonist who had made a name for himself in Lionel Hampton's big band, Illinois Jacquette. The year was 1946.
Tell you a story. I used to play hooky from scooters to meet, you know, Illinois Jacquette. After a while, he would let me hang out with him a little bit, you know. You know, one time he let me play with the band. I was about 12. I never will forget that. That was my big day, playing with my idol, you know.
The full-bodied, bluesy sound was a trademark of Jacquette's, and Stanley patterned himself after his idol. At the same time, Turrentine's older brother, Tommy, taught Stanley the popular tunes of the day.
He used to write out all little songs like, you know, Round About Midnight or Nineteenies, all these little things that were happening. Sears Delight and all those type of things Tommy would, we'd be playing, we'd have it in a book. And Tommy would write out, you know, little ditties. And I learned those songs from him, you know. But Tommy was a tremendous influence to me.
Tommy and Stanley Turrentine recorded several albums together over the years, including Coming Your Way on the Blue Note label in 1961. Tommy gave Stanley his first real job with a band while they were still in high school. But when blues guitarist Lowell Fulsom came to Pittsburgh, he offered Stanley a chance to go on the road. In 1951, when Stanley was just 17 years old, he toured with Fulsom's band.
Traveling this raggedy bus. It was held together by baling wire and chewing gum. Broke down every 15, 20 minutes. Look, well, anyhow, we traveled down south. And, you know, it was during that, they called it then Jim Crow, which is racism still. And there's no hotels we could stay in, just rooming houses and white water fountain, white toilets, and, you know, white and black, those colored then. We used to play in tobacco warehouses, I used to separate the dance floor. Blacks dance on one side, whites dance on the other side. I never could figure that one out.
Lowell Fulsom's band was one of many all-black ensembles that toured the segregated South. Traveling late at night on deserted roads was risky for black men. But Stanley remembers how the musicians looked out for one another. They passed along tips about what roads to avoid or what rooming houses had accommodations.
I mean, our lives were in jeopardy, just traveling, just merely to play music. But, you know, we got through that, man. But, you know, we got up on a bandstand, we played, and sometimes we didn't eat. But we got up on that bandstand, that seemed like to be the sacred place because cats played like we had an eight-course meal, a seven-course meal, you know.
Stanley toured with Fulsom's band for about a year before returning home to Pittsburgh. He and his brother Tommy worked in clubs around town, and they moved on to Cleveland to find more jobs. Then, in 1953, Stanley was hired to replace John Coltrane in Earl Bostick's band.
Well, Earl Bostick was a phenomenal saxophone player, man. You know, as far as guys playing above the horn, altissimo, some guys just hit a few notes up there. But nice guy. You know, I think I learned about reading the audience. You know, when you're playing a club, you got to figure out how to get a rapport with the audience. And I think I learned quite a bit of that from Earl Bostick.
Bostick and his band drove from one end of the country to the other, electrifying audiences along the way.
Oh boy, did we travel. We traveled in a seven-passenger Cadillac, nine of us. I remember one time we did 30 straight one-nighters, and it was funky.
In 1955, after 2 years with Bostick, Turrentine was drafted into the Army. He says it's the only time he received formal music training. After his military stint ended in 1959, Turrentine returned to Pittsburgh and joined up with bebop pioneer Max Roach.
Well, you know, actually, I didn't really think I was ready to go out there on the road with Max Roach because he has been, you know, one of the elite innovators of this music we call jazz, playing with Charlie Parker, and Charlie Parker was one of my idols, and you know, I didn't think I was ready for him. But my brother convinced me, and we went from there to New York and started working, and we went to Europe, and then I think internationally, you know, Max is responsible for me getting known.
During this period, Stanley made his debut recording with Max Roach's ensemble.
He wasn't a kind of a restrictive band leader. He wanted everybody to utilize their own ideas and whatever songs that they want to play. He said, well, express yourself, you know. He let everybody express the way that they felt about the music and the way they thought about the music. Thank you.
Stanley Turrentine on tenor saxophone, Max Roach on drums, George DeVivier on bass, and Tommy Flanagan on piano. From the album Stan the Man Turrentine, recorded in 1959. Stanley lived in New York City in the late 1950s. It was the center of modern jazz, the place to hear the newest and hippest sounds. And just like his hometown, there were clubs all over New York where Stanley jammed with all the greats.
You know, when we finish a gig, maybe when I'm working up in Minton's or something, we go somewhere else, go down to Smalls and jam, or go down to Wells and jam. It was always playing, always music, somewhere to play. I jam with Clifford Brown, I jam with Sonny Rollins, I mean, a whole lot of cats. It was nothing about the, you know, well, I can outplay you here. You know, we would try to do, you know, our thing the best way that we could do our thing, but it wasn't the thing that we were trying to, you know, compete against this guy. It wasn't a competition.
The bandstand proved to be Stanley Turrentine's classroom. Before reaching his 30th birthday, he had worked with some of the finest musicians around, Earl Bostic, Illinois Jacquette, Max Roach, and Lowell Fulsom. Still to come, success in the face of controversy. Stanley Turrentine crosses musical boundaries, and some say he crossed the line. I'm Nancy Wilson, with a tribute to tenor saxophonist Stanley Turrentine on Jazz Profiles, from NPR, National Public Radio. In 1960, Stanley met and married organist Shirley Scott and moved to her hometown, Philadelphia. As fate would have it, one of his neighbors was also one of the hottest organists of the day.
Jimmy Smith and I used to live two doors down. I lived in Germantown, and I used to see him quite often, you know. And during that time when I was in Pittsburgh, when I came out of the Army, I used to go down to the Hurricane Bar and jam with Jimmy Smith. That's when the organ was a big thing, you know, and Jimmy was the cat.
At the time, Jimmy Smith was one of Blue Note's brightest stars. He'd recorded dozens of hits for the label. A spur-of-the-moment invitation from Smith led to Stanley Turrentine's first major recording contract.
One day, I was walking out of the door, and Jimmy Smith said, "Hey, Turrentine, you want to make a record date?" I said, "Yeah, man." So we jumped in the car and drove up to Rudy Van Gelder's and made Midnight Special. And that was a hit, just like that. No rehearsal, no nothing. Thank you.
Count Basie's 1 o'clock jump from the album Midnight Special, featuring Jimmy Smith on organ, with Stanley Turrentine on tenor sax, Kenny Burrell on guitar, and Donald Bailey on drums.
Jimmy and I have a thing for the blues, you know. We were talking about sound, feeling, and emotion. And that's what we tried to portray, and that's exactly what I think we did it.
Guitarist Kenny Burrell.
The sessions that we did with Stanley Turrentine were wonderful in the sense that the feeling was so mellow and so soulful that we just had a great time doing it. I think Stanley's another person that works well with Jimmy and certainly works well with me. It's just like a little family, a little soulful family going on there, and I think it really works well.
Blue Note owner Alfred Lyon loved Stanley's robust sound. He offered Turrentine a recording contract. The year was 1960, and Stanley's first Blue Note album as a leader featured Horace Parlin on piano, George Tucker on bass, and Al Harewood on drums. Here's Stanley's composition, Little Sherry, written for his daughter. Made several recordings for Blue Note in the early 1960s, and he continued recording with Jimmy Smith. Smith was considered the king of Hammond B3 organ, and Stanley's first wife, Shirley Scott, was the queen. For most of the decade, Shirley Scott's band featured Stanley Turrentine on tenor sax. They toured the country, promoting their own soulful brand of music, deeply rooted in blues and gospel.
Oh man, that was the chitlin' circuit. That's what they call it. We used to have to carry our organ in a trailer and travel from coast to coast. And she was there, man. And each night she gave 110%, you know, working with Shirley. It was a true, loving experience. She was not only a good soloist, but she was able to accompany. You know, she knew how to comp behind you, you know, and there was a lot of people play that organ sometimes, and they got all that power up under there, and they get carried away. And, you know, but Shirley and Jimmy just knew how to use it for the best. Thank you.
Shirley Scott and Stanley Turrentine, recorded live at the Front Room in Newark, New Jersey in 1965. It's NPR's Jazz Profiles with a tribute to a giant of the tenor saxophone, Stanley Turrentine. I'm Nancy Wilson. The professional success Stanley Turrentine and Shirley Scott found on the road took a heavy toll on their personal lives. In 1970, their marriage ended. Artistically, Stanley began to explore new musical territory beyond the boundaries of mainstream jazz. His sound became more contemporary, fusing elements of rhythm and blues, rock, and soul music. During this period, producer Creed Taylor created a record company that showcased this musical fusion. In 1969, Taylor signed Stanley to his CTI label. CTI debut, Sugar, featuring Freddie Hubbard on trumpet and George Benson on guitar. Creed Taylor had produced a series of jazz hits for the Verve label before he created CTI.
I recorded Stanley because I thought anybody who could play like that, if they would record with Benson and Hubbard, and Stanley hadn't recorded with those two people before, and with a jazz rhythm section instead of more of the pure funk side, that he would gain a new audience, and a lot of people liked the way he played.
Sugar was one of the first of many hit records Stanley made for CTI. Younger audiences loved his albums for their blend of blues, R&B, soul, and rock. Responding to the desires of this new audience, Stanley began recording some of the popular tunes of the day. Don't Mess with Mr. T, written by Marvin Gaye, became Stanley's theme song. In the mid-70s, Stanley moved on to the Fantasy label, where he continued to record contemporary songs. But his success was not without controversy. Critics and some musicians have denounced his work for being too commercial. Critic Don Heckman writes for the Los Angeles Times.
There is a tendency, I think, to feel that anything that is commercially successful is by definition lacking in aesthetic value. in that process, the content of the music sometimes doesn't get looked at very carefully.
Bassist Ray Brown.
Stanley has been subject to people trying to get him to make hit records, you know. And I've always told him that hit records are okay, but when the hit's gone, you got to stand around looking for your next one. And if you don't have one, you know, they kind of fluff you off a little bit. So you're better off just playing some good jazz, because the people that listen to you and like you are going to listen to you for the rest of your life.
Commercialism isn't a bad word to me. Why not reach an audience that you haven't got? Or you're inspiring to get, or you're making money. Why not? You know, this is all I do, is play music. And it's the way I make my living. It's the way I support my family. It's the way I, you know, pay my bills. And, you know, I'm just grateful that God gave me a gift to be able to just play music, which I love. And I don't want restrictions on it. Nobody's going to tell me what I should be playing.
Writer Don Heckman says it's important to make a distinction between the so-called smooth jazz artists who play pop instrumentals and seasoned musicians like Stanley Turrentine, Ahmad Jamal, and Ramsey Lewis, who play everything from top 40 to bebop and swing.
There is no way in which you could dismiss people like Ramsey Lewis or Stanley Turrentine or Ahmad Jamal or Gene Harris or even Cannonball Adderley, for that matter, on the basis of the fact that they have done some commercially oriented recordings, because they have demonstrated in too many other ways that they are talented jazz artists in the purest sense of the word.
It's been almost 50 years since Stanley started performing, and he's not about to stop. He continues to travel around the world, bringing the house down when he performs. He says as long as his work reflects his life experiences, he'll always have a story to tell his audiences.
But you know, that's what's so fascinating about this music, man. You know, for you to just put it in one category and say, this is it. But, you know, there's so much to this music, man. You never know, you know, what kind of thing that you're going to fall into, you know, in this music game. But that's why it keeps me young. It keeps it exciting, man. It's always something challenging. There's always something different.
Bassist Ray Brown.
Let's not forget that Mr. Turrentine is one of the best saxophone players walking around the streets today. I mean, he's got a lot of music left in him that he's going to play. And I think he's going to make a lot more good music. When he works with my band, there are certain things he said, boy, that's tough. I said, yeah. He said, but let's play it because I want the challenge. I like when he thinks like that, that makes me feel good.
Writer Don Heckman.
He has made an amazing number of recordings. I'm sure he's done more than 70 or 75 albums under his own name, and probably hundreds with other people. That's a tremendous amount of longevity. I mean, he's been all over the place. So this is a musician with considerable credentials, and I think he needs to be taken seriously.
Stanley Turrentine has made significant contributions to American music. His deep, ballsy tenor sound is infused with clear tones, a down-home blues feeling, and pure emotion. He has an identifiable sound, has been a pioneer in the soul jazz movement, and he's earned the respect of his peers. Stanley Turrentine is an artist committed to exploring the depths of the music he loves and sharing the journey with everyone who wants to listen.
I don't know what's in store for me. The only thing I just know is that I love to play, and I have the privilege of playing with some of the greatest musicians in the world. And that's a blessing. And I don't know what's gonna come from that. As long as I can breathe, as long as I can play that horn, I'll play.
Our tribute to Stanley Turrentine was written and produced by Njamile Carol Jones. Post-production engineers, Rima Snyder and Leo Del Aguila. Jazz Profiles is produced by Tim Owens. Our editor is Madeline Smith. Our website coordinator is Patrick Breslin. Our administrative assistant is Linda Braun. The vice president of NPR's cultural programming is Murray Horwitz. Special thanks to Mrs. Judith Turrentine, Michael Bloom, Douglas Payne, NPR's New York and Los Angeles bureaus, and Telarc, Blue Note, CTI, and Fantasy Records. To email us or for more information about this and other programs in our series, visit NPR's homepage on the World Wide Web at npr.org. That's npr.org. Major support for Jazz Profiles comes from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund, helping people to make the arts and culture an active part of their everyday lives. Additional support has been provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Nancy Wilson. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
You've been listening to a celebration of the life and career of tenor saxophonist Stanley Turrentine. He passed away in the year 2000, just a few months after this show was produced. Discover more great jazz at NPR Music, including our new series, Live at the Village Vanguard, live webcasts and archives from America's premier jazz club. Check it out at nprmusic.org.